scheduled in the bottom of the ninth. Look out!
Oh, my goodness.
The 0-1. Oh, that got him, and it got him in the face. Oh, my goodness.
Well, after the little fracas.
There we go.
There we go, so.
Hello and welcome. You are up and in with season two of the Chin Music Podcast. I am Nick, your host. We've got some exciting things in store for season two. We've got a new 2024 season of baseball that has kicked off. We're not yet a full weekend, but we're getting close. We'll hopefully be doing some more exciting things with Chin Music, looking at our social media is hopefully going to start getting more active, maybe even a YouTube debut, some exciting things in store. And we have new intros. And first up today, I've got the prospect guy. If you've got questions about the tools of an 18-year-old in the Rockies organization, he's your guy. What was the score of the Trash Pandas game yesterday? Only he would know. The only thing he loves more than Ricky Tiedemann is a Topps 1-of-1 Alfonso Soriano rookie card. Omaha native Ben. Ben, I am curious, what is your favorite baseball card currently in your possession?
I'll go with the one I got in today because of recency bias. I have a Alex Clemmy autograph card I just got in out of $299. Purple Bowman Chrome first. So I'm pretty excited to get it. It's beautiful, and I'm big on Alex Clemmy. If you're going to bet pitchers, bet on organization, and the Guardians pump out arms.
Nice. Love that. And what did you think of the new intro?
10 out of 10. That smacks.
Let's go. All right. Next up. This host will never forgive ESPN for the lack of prospects in their system. Every time Victor Scott steals a base, he becomes a little less grumpy. An annual contender in our Dynasty League who once played number 6 on the field, but he's number 1 on this podcast. Kirksville native Brock. Brock, I am curious for you. If you could choose a unique house pet to have, what house pet would that be?
Hello, Nick. Appreciate the new little intro there. You definitely doxed me, though, so I'll have to keep my eye out, make sure people don't track me down. But I would favorite house pet. So let's set a parameter here. Is it just wild animals, zoo animals? Like, any animal can be domesticated and be my house pet? Or of the, like, lemurs and those kind of odd house pets out of those?
I'm going to say the former. So as long as it's not like a typical house pet, like you can choose literally any animal and it would be your pet.
Okay. Assuming it's domesticated, I think I would go with, I'm not really a cat person, but I think having a pet panther, just like a black panther that's domesticated, would be a very masculine pick. And I think I like it.
I will say that on TikTok, there's a lot of content of people with very large cats in their home. I can't remember what. Oh, a serval. There's a lot of serval content on TikTok, and that is all over my For You page a lot. And honestly, they are just big cats. Like, a lot of their tendencies and stuff, they do look like big cats. But I would always obviously be concerned that it's a giant cat with massive claws and teeth. But yes, with going with your assumption that they are fully domesticated, I agree. I like that pick. And last but not least, we've got someone who's never actually listened to an episode of this show. The reigning champion of our redraft fantasy league and the self-proclaimed anti-commissioner in our dynasty league and my biggest rival. The founding father of Book Club TS, St. Louis native Vansel. Vansel, my question for you is, if we could interview one guy on this podcast, who would you pick?
Hello, brother. I would probably pick... Man, who would be a good interview? I mean, maybe you got to go with... the up and coming face of baseball, Bobby Witt Jr.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. That's not who I guessed you were going to say. But
who did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to say Bo.
Bo would be a good one, too. But, you know, I feel like with the seemingly trajectory of Bobby Witt Jr., with the second half that he had last year and the hot start he's on now, calling it face of baseball. Maybe not a bold prediction. Maybe everyone feels that way. But
yeah, I think he had three balls that he hit harder than 109 miles an hour today, which is pretty impressive, I would say. Pretty impressive. Yeah.
I think we would get a lot of notoriety as a podcast if we got a Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah, that's probably true. That would give us some traction. That makes season two go crazy.
Maybe we can manifest it with this answer right now.
Yep. All right. Yeah, I think that's what we got for the intros. I might tweak them a little bit as we get into the season. I thought about doing like an April Fool's introduction for one of you, but I don't know. I didn't have enough time to come up with it, but that could have been funny to have some sort of April Fool's aspect of the show, as it is April Fool's Day, but alas, here we are. No April Fool's jokes today. Let's do content updates. Let's jump right in. I realized I'm pretty sure we missed content updates last week. So Vansel, you've got so much time with which to share your content intake. Vansel, what content have you been taking in?
I'm actually in a dispute with my electric company right now, so I have no power. So I haven't really been able to watch anything. I'm currently at a temporary office at the public library.
I don't think that's true.
Okay.
You're not at the public library right now, are you?
Yeah. I clipped the background from the old ones.
And I was about to say, your background looks very much like your room usually does.
No, my content update has obviously been baseball since the season started. So that is all I've pretty much been watching. I did watch Tottenham pull out the win this Saturday. Arsenal and Man City on Sunday. That is the nice part about Premier League, is that it is in the morning, so it bridges the gap of when I wake up and when baseball starts. So that is pretty helpful.
So. Nice. That's great. I just solved that problem by living on the West Coast, so when I wake up, I have very little time to wait.
You also sleep till like 11 your time anyways, so.
This is occasionally true. Occasionally true. All right, next up we've got Ben. Ben, what kind of content have you been taking in?
Baseball. Yeah. Pretty much just baseball. Yeah, I can't think of really anything else huge. The new episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm that came out, watch that. Other than that, pretty much just ball. And then yesterday I watched a lot of live baseball card auctions, trying to get a gauge of how this thing works. And yeah, I got sucked in.
That's fun. Where do those happen? How does that even work?
There's an app called Whatnot. They do, you can bid on like case breaks, so you can like bid on team and they'll break the cards, and if you get like a sweet hit out of it for a team, or they just send you all that team's cards. But it's pretty interesting. And then they do like one of one auctions. So they just auction one card at a time sometimes. So it's pretty interesting. So on Whatnot.
Yeah, I'm a little bit familiar with Whatnot. When I first got down here, I got into the, I guess, retro gaming, like a lot of old Nintendo systems, like N64 and GameCube and old Game Boy stuff. I did a lot of trading and acquiring of those old games, and a lot of that happens on Whatnot as well. So I'm a little bit familiar with that. And Brock, content updates. I feel like this is going to be pretty much all around. Everyone has clearly, it's the first week of baseball. We've been watching a lot of baseball, but was there anything else that you watched this week, Brock?
No, just baseball. I want to thank the Dodgers for being the Dodgers and getting games on Apple TV and ESPN on Friday and Sunday night. So I got to watch the Cardinals and avoid the blackout.
Yeah, that's great. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of primetime Dodgers games this year. Content for me, pretty much same, a lot of baseball. I actually went to the Cardinals game on Saturday, which is currently the one game that we have won. So if we don't win any more games until the home opener, and then we win the home opener, we'll know why we are winning all of these games, because I am lucky enough to be flying back for the home opener as well. Yamamoto did look good on the day that I went, but we still got the W, so that was fun. Other than that, content updates. I watched the finale of The Bachelor. I can't remember if that was something that I had mentioned on one of the shows or not, but the show concluded, and that was entertaining as well. I think that's pretty much it. Like everybody said, a lot of baseball. I've been watching a little bit of basketball. Today, I actually sat down and watched the entire LSU Iowa Elite Eight women's basketball game. Very, very fun. Caitlin Clark hit 9 threes, went 9 of 18 from three, and had like 37 points. Played absolutely out of her mind, and they ended up winning by like 10, I think. So that was very exciting. I watched a little bit of the men's Elite Eight. Purdue, my mom went to Purdue, and they are in the Final Four, and I have them picked to win the tournament. So that is exciting. If they do win the tournament, then I will win my bracket challenge. So yeah, that's pretty much just a lot of sports for me. I have been watching every once in a while. I'll throw on Avatar: Last Airbender. Oh, I guess Saturday morning when I went up to LA to watch the baseball game Saturday night, I also went up Saturday morning and watched the League of Legends semifinals, the LCS semifinals, which was up in LA as well, which was very fun. I got to meet my favorite team afterwards, and they signed my jersey. It was pretty cool. My team won. It was a sweep. Three game sweep, so that was exciting as well. All right, first weekend reactions. I've got some questions for you all to go through. Brock, we can start with you. And the first question that I'm going to throw to you is, what prediction that you made last week on this podcast are you currently feeling the best about?
Let me pull up our previous predictions, or do you have those handy? I accidentally X'd out of our notes.
Yeah, I can share my screen like so. I can tell
I
you what, it's
think
probably
just
not the Cardinals winning the Central.
no, I mean, I think the Dodgers are going to be an all-time great team, and we really should have won 2 of 4. So I was actually pleasantly surprised with, how bad we looked, but we still kind of played with the Dodgers for a little 4-game series. But I think that the Orioles, and yes, they're playing the Angels, but the Orioles look like they're just going to be awesome. Corbin Burnes and Grayson Rodriguez both had really, really good starts. I don't have those stats pulled up, but I know they struck out a bunch and didn't give up hardly any runs. Corbin Burnes in his first start with the Orioles, I think, had 10 or 11 Ks. And their lineup just hits 1 through 9, and there's not really a big hole in that lineup. And the Yankees did look good, so I might talk about that later, but I think the Orioles looked awesome, so I'll go with that pick.
Yeah, and I think one of your picks that we should not overlook is the second NL Cy Young, Freddy Peralta. There were a lot of numbers after that Freddy Peralta start the other day where his stuff is even nastier than it was last year, and there's a lot of good things from that first Freddy Peralta start. Obviously, it's just one start, so stuff plus takes a little bit to normalize, but everything that I heard from Enoceres is that he was very excited about how Freddy Peralta looked in that first start. So I like that prediction of yours as well. What about you, Vance? So what prediction do you feel the best about so far?
Ronald Blanco just completed the no-hitter against the Blue Jays.
Well, that's exciting. No hitter already.
17th no-hitter in franchise history. I think it's now officially baseball season now that the Astros have thrown a no-hitter with some
Yeah, I'd
random
say
guy.
so.
So that's pretty cool.
Only 105 pitches, too. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I guess it just takes a no-hitter for the Astros to win.
Yeah. I can't believe they got swept by the Yankees. I was making parlays and I included the Astros to win every single one of those games, and they just kept on losing.
Yeah. What was the question though? I was pretty intent on watching that.
Your the prediction that you made in our last show that you feel the best about.
Sure, sure, sure.
After week number one.
Yeah, I feel I don't know. I made some bold picks on division winners, so maybe not that one. So probably something with the reward. What would I pick? Maybe Zach Wheeler for Cy Young. He looked pretty good. Honestly, both my Cy Young picks looked pretty solid in their first two starts, Gausman and Zach Wheeler.
Yeah, I like the Gausman pick. It's whoever got a discount on Gausman in this draft season, I bet, feels really good about it after he came out and pitched week one and looked great. And pretty much all that's left to do is just build up. He probably has one more start of build up this week, but then after that, I think he's probably full go.
Jackson Chourio as rookie of the year. He's also off to a hot start, so maybe less good about that one as the Cy Youngs, but right. Some note.
Yeah, no, both your Cy Youngs are off to a good start. All right, Ben, what's your favorite prediction from last week based on how the first weekend has gone?
Grayson Rodriguez Cy Young looks pretty nice. He looks salty in his first start. And then as a secondary one, the stats aren't huge yet. But through four games, Seiya Suzuki has 10 batted balls over 100 miles an hour, including like four batted like 108 plus. So that's exciting. He's crushing the ball. And yeah, gotta love it.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, I was going to say Grayson Rodriguez is one that I really liked too. He did just look crazy, and it looks like that step up that he had in the second half last year is true to form, and he's going to continue that. I still kind of like my Gunnar Henderson pick for AL MVP. He's had a pretty good start, and like everyone has been saying throughout this show already, like the Orioles just look like they're going to be so, so good, and I don't see any reason that they're going to slow down, and I think Gunnar is just going to kind of ride that wave. And do well. I mean, I think my World Series of Dodgers over Orioles feels pretty good. I think those two teams look like the best in baseball right now. So, yeah, that's exciting. My Astros, oh, I guess we can just jump right into predictions that we feel the worst about so far. The Astros winning the West. I think I feel pretty bad about that after they just got four game. I mean, I guess they did just throw a no-hitter right now. But they did get four games swept by the Yankees, who I left out of my playoffs entirely. And I still don't think the Yankees are that great. And the Astros just didn't look like they could put away a game. I don't know what it was. They jumped out to a couple of leads, but and then blew them. And we all talked about how great we thought their bullpen was going to be. And I thought their bullpen was going to be good too. And I'm sure it still will. And I guess, I don't know. I don't feel that bad about it because their starters – all like I think Christian Javier, his first start back looked great. He's doing some great things with his changeup. He changed his fastball a little bit. And I think that if he, you know, comes to form, that is going to be a really good thing for the Astros to have. So I guess I don't feel as bad about it. Then which one do I feel? I guess Jackson Merrill, NL Rookie of the Year. After Yamamoto came out and looked as good as he did. In that starting against the Cardinals this weekend, I think he's probably got it figured out or going to figure it out soon. And Jackson Merrill's been a little bit quiet. So I would say that is maybe something that I don't feel great about. And I guess, like I said, after the Yankees just four games swept, leaving them out of the playoffs maybe was not the right decision. Oh, also Cardinals winning the NL Central. I say that it sounds bad, but I don't know. The Central, I think, is just bad all around. And the Cubs just lost Justin Steele. I think the Brewers are going to be bad. The Pirates have looked good, but, I mean, they started off really hot last year too. And the Reds have just had such a wreck of injuries and the suspension. And I don't know. I think the Central is going to be close, but I would not be surprised if the winner of the Central has like 81 wins, which it's going to be a fight to whoever can be positive in the win column over the loss column, I think, and they're going to win the division. All right, does anybody have any predictions they feel bad about? Ben, you got any predictions that you're looking back on? You're like, eh, maybe that wasn't the best. Obviously, it's probably an overreaction because we're only like a weekend here. It's very small sample size. But anyone that you're looking at, you're thinking, eh, I don't know
I
about that one.
mean, Nolan Shanwell is just a not great pick in general. It's not really reacting to anything. I just don't think he has any chance to win Rookie of the Year in the American League. So like for that reason, it's a good pick, but like it's a bad pick. But other than that, I'm pretty happy with my picks. I got the guys off that I like and the, spicier takes that I like in there that I think, all still holding up pretty well. If Justin Steele was out for the season, I'd have a lot of takes I'd have to run back. But it looks like he's only going to miss like 4 to 6 weeks. So we can figure it out.
Yeah, I'm surprised you call out Nolan Chanuel first on the day he hits his a home run. He hit a home run today. He's looked, I don't know, I think he's looked pretty good.
I think he'll probably hit single digit home runs though his first year. Like he's just not a power guy. He'll have like I think he'll probably have his 360 OBP, but I think this slug's going to be in the high 300s. So, he'll be a valuable player, and I think he'll grow into a pretty nice player once he figures out how to optimize his power. Probably just figuring out like how to pull and optimize when you pull, etc. But if he could be high OBP and get his power up to 20, he could be an awesome player, but we'll just see what he grows into because it's tough to be at a single digit home run guy at first base.
Yeah, and it's crazy for me to have gone through my predictions that I didn't like and not mentioned the Tigers. I think it was pretty clear from the last show that I was very, very high on the Tigers. And don't get me wrong, their pitching has looked great, but their offense has looked a lot more suspect than I was hoping and than I was thinking. I think we're gonna need some stepping up from Colt Keith, and Colt Keith was sitting today. And they're just, I don't know, they're doing some like Cary Carpenter is platooning, and I think he's got a good enough bat where he doesn't need to be doing that. I don't know. Their offense has not looked good enough to maintain a good win percentage all season long and take that division, I don't think. They're, like I said, they're pitching. Jack Flaherty came out and looked great. Reese Olson looked great today. I mean, Tarik Skubal obviously looked great. I think, I mean, they've got a chance. Their pitching is, probably the best in the division, which is, I don't think that big of a statement. I mean, the Twins, I guess, have decent pitching, but Guardians have decent pitching. But I think the Tigers have a chance to have the best rotation, but their offense, I think, just needs a lot of work based on what I've seen so far. What about you, Brock? Do you have any predictions that you are regretting a little bit?
Yeah, seeing Yamamoto pitch as well as he did, I still like Paul Skenes. I think if he's up like by the end of May, he's in AAA right now. If they call him up and give him a shot and he looks good, maybe he compete with Yamamoto. But I think at the time, I was a little worried that Yamamoto got roughed up in the spring and then he came out and looked like he wasn't. Like he had pretty overpowering stuff against the Cardinals and our lineup, I think, will end up being pretty solid again this year. So he seems like the clear favorite for NL Rookie of the Year. And then let's see. I thought the Red Sox actually looked pretty good. Their pitchers, they went 2-2. I think they split against the Mariners, but like Cutter Crawford had a really good start. Whitlock had a good start. Pivetta pitched well. I don't know, former Cardinal Tyler O'Neill had a pretty big, he had another opening day home run, and I think he stole a bag and hit another home run yesterday. So if he can stay healthy, he's going to be a nice addition to that lineup. And then they'll be getting Vaughn Grissom here in a little while. Hopefully a healthy year of Trevor Story and Tristan Casas. I don't know, I guess I'm talking about that I like that pick, but I didn't talk about that earlier, but I think they'll be all right. Yeah, I'll just stick with that rookie of the year. I don't know that at this point I would change many of them.
Yeah, I don't know. You are another one that's picked a pick of yours that I quite like in the Paul Skenes pick. I think you know, the Pirates are 5-0. I think they're going to start, you know, seeing a division victory in a division that's in such shambles. And I think they're going to push Skeens to the majors quickly. And I think, I mean, his first start in the minors, he was perfect with 3 innings, 7 Ks, didn't allow a base runner. I think he's going to be in the majors very soon. And I think he's going to be dominant when he gets there. I like that pick quite a bit, but obviously I agree. Yamamoto did look very good.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. It all comes down to if they call him up, but like you said, the parts of, they had a good opening series, and Jared Jones looked really good. So,
yeah, that was going to be one of my overreactions for later. He's had, I don't know if you've looked at Stuff Plus numbers or heard, you know, other guys talk about it, but that Jared Jones start, I think, has been one of the best Stuff Plus starts of this year already. So that, I mean, I think the Pirates, if they bring up Paul Skeens and Jared Jones, they could have two of the best, like, young pitchers in the entire league. Up at the same
time. Exciting. And they've got guys behind them too. They're gonna be fun. I think we might have talked about that earlier, but the Reds are kind of who everyone's talking about in the NL Central right now, but I think the Pirates are gonna be that next year, as long as O'Neill can stay healthy, and they've got some fun guys in their system, like Tamar Johnson. So
yeah, and they've played 5 games and won them all, and every single one of their games so far has been against a lefty starter, which O'Neill Cruz is traditionally worse against lefty starters. Jack Suwinski, probably one of their like higher upside bats, also very bad against lefties. So I think once, obviously, five games and 5 lefty starters is not, you know, typical, not a typical sample size. So once that starts normalizing a little bit, maybe even some of their bats start catching up, and I don't know, they could be exciting. Vance, so what do you got? What is one of the picks that you are looking back and regretting a little bit, if you have any?
I wouldn't say I'm necessarily regretting my Phillies choice so far, but I'd say that's an area of concern, as I also had them winning the World Series, but their bullpen has given up a lot of runs. They did play the Braves, so one of the top two lineups in baseball, but they also kind of gave up this was an extras today against the Reds, but gave up a grand slam. So the bullpen hasn't been as dominant as I thought it would be. Aaron Nola did not look good whenever I thought he might have fixed his issues last year, because he kind of had a good stretch at the end. So that's a little concerning, but it is early. Really doesn't seem like Yamamoto despises Ohtani and is going to force a trade to the AL just yet, but I guess give it time. Maybe if they start losing, it'll become more pressing. You know, the saying of winning cures all issues. So if they start losing, they'll probably just, you know, drive the wedge farther in. But I guess that's, you know. But, you know, the Dodgers, you know, doesn't seem like they're ever going to start losing. I guess that's one of my regrets, is not having the Dodgers winning the World Series, as they just seem so good. Every area of the game seems so deep. So I guess that. The Yankees looked really good sweeping the Astros in 4 in Houston. So that would, the fact that none of us had the Yankees even making the playoffs kind of looks rough for all of us right now. I'll go ahead and segue into the major overreactions.
Yeah.
And mine is the Red Sox pitching is going to be good. At least their starters. They got the new pitching coach that is encouraging them to throw their off speed more, especially whenever their off speeds and changeups are their best pitches, instead of forcing a fastball every time. That's kind of what I'm seeing on Twitter right now. And I mean, they have some promise. Like Brian Bayo has looked pretty solid. Nick Pivetta had that good stretch into last year and then looked really good start. I don't think there was ever really questions about their lineup. maybe some depth in it, but they have some upper end talent with Devers, bounce back from Story, Tyler O'Neill looking good, Tristan Casas, good balance on the left and right side. And then, so I think my major overreaction is Red Sox are making the playoffs, going from, I think, what we assume, or at least my assumption was, of fourth place finish being their best. So now I think they're going to make it if this keeps up. I guess they need their starting pitching to have healthy years, but I think they'll all be good.
Yeah, I like that overreaction a lot. I've always been a big Cutter Crawford guy. He looked great in his first start. Garrett Whitlock looked great. They've got, I mean, Nick Pivetta put together a really good second half last year, and he's carried that over into the spring, and he carried it over into now. It really is a bummer that they didn't add, you know, one more pitcher over the offseason. I know they added Giolito, but when they knew that they had lost him for the whole season, I said this on a couple pods ago, like, I really think they just should have gone out and added, whether it have been Snell, Montgomery, or Cease, like, gone out and done something like that to really compete. I mean, I do think that it's an overreaction to say they're going to make the playoffs, but I could see it for sure.
Part of my overreaction will be that they didn't need to sign one of those guys.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, it's a good one. I like that. Because, like, I mean, and even Bayo, I mean, I think they all, their whole pitching staff looked good. Brock, do you have an overreaction?
I don't know if it's really an overreaction, but I think, no, it's not at all. I just think Mookie Betts is going to have one of the greatest seasons ever as long as he stays healthy. He already has 4 home runs, 9 runs, 10 RBIs. He may not steal very many bags, but from a categories fantasy context, I think he's going to be like even crazier than we could have imagined if he keeps getting on base. I don't know, watching that Dodgers team, like, I don't think the Cardinals are that bad. I thought we, despite, I mean, Steven Matz pitched pretty well last night, but we looked completely overmatched as far as the 1 through 9, and we still kind of played with them, and that is just a super small sample size of baseball on a 4-game series, but I think the Dodgers just are going to be insane. Like, they made the Cardinals look bad, and I don't think the Cardinals are as bad as they look in comparison to the Dodgers. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a fun year, and a lot of scoring records might get broken as long as guys can stay healthy. Teoscar Hernandez looks like his old self again. Max Muncy can't play defense still, but he can hit the ball. So even those guys that, I don't know, would be holes in other lineups are would be the best hitter in a lot of other lineups. Yes, Vansel.
I forgot to say my other overreaction was Dodgers are breaking the regular season wins record.
What is that, 114?
Like 116, maybe. Something in that range.
That's
they were close a few years ago. I think they won like 111, maybe. I don't know. We'll go on to Ben for overreactions, and I'll look that stat up and see.
Cardinals are cooked. It got to be my overreaction. no pitching. I just want it to be my overreaction because it's fun. He had a bad first 3 games. So, you know, I got to make that my overreaction or 4 games. But to be fair, I do really think you guys should have traded Goldschmidt and Arenado last year for younger talent. I don't know. You have like a fun young core, but I don't know if it's going to be enough with the pitching you have. Though Kyle Gibson looks pretty good tonight, and you're up 4-0 right now. So maybe I'll eat my words at the end of the season.
Don't love that overreaction. my overreaction, I think, is going to be that only 2 teams will make the playoffs from the central divisions combined. Basically saying there will not be a single wild card from the NL Central or the AL Central. And in addition to that, no Central Division team in either league will win a single playoff game. I think that's an overreaction, but I have not been, like I said, the Tigers offense didn't look nearly as good as I wanted them to be. The Twins haven't looked great there. I can't remember who, there was a suspect pitcher the other day that shut down the Twins for a very long period of time. The Royals pitching actually has not looked that bad. Obviously, Cole Reagans is a big industry guy right now. He looks great. Seth Lugo didn't look bad. Michael Wacha had a decent start today. Salvador Perez looks like he's not necessarily young again, but he's hit a couple home runs all this year already. And Bobby Witt obviously looks amazing. So the Royals don't look bad, but I don't think that they have the starting pitching and the bullpen to really put together a season that challenges any of these bigger, you know, East or West Coast teams. The Guardians, I think their offense is incredibly suspect. And then in the NL Central, like I said, the Cardinals didn't look great against the Dodgers. I think I still like my pick for the Cardinals to win the division. The Pirates, they're 5-0, yeah, but I don't really know how confident I am in the consistency of their offense. Obviously, if Cabrian Hayes really puts it together like it looks like he might have, they could be good, and they bring up Paul Skeens. The Cubs, I think, are really going to struggle for the next month and a half or so while they don't have Steele. I don't know. I don't see a single team in either of the Central divisions winning more than, you know, 84, 85 games, which I think is what it's going to take to get a wild card. What do you got, Vansel?
Just want to address the first half of your overreaction being that only division winners will make the playoffs. I don't think it's an overreaction when you also didn't predict any other wildcard teams coming from the Central. So it's more just consistent with what you predicted. It's not really an overreaction, you know. Kind of like the Dodgers being a dark horse World Series pick.
That's fair, but I think
the second half is a good overreaction.
The fact that there isn't going to be a single playoff game won by any of the teams.
For the ones not winning over 84 or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think any of the teams are going to win more than 84 games, and I don't think any of them are going to win a single playoff game.
I'll take that overreaction, but I had an issue with the first part.
Yeah.
Segueing into that little research that I had done there, so the record is 116. The Yankees and the Cubs have tied, I don't know the years, but the Dodgers 2 years ago won 111 games. So I don't know that that's a huge overreaction, but yeah, that's what I found in my quick little Google search.
The Cardinals are cooked, so I guess that's not an overreaction.
I don't know. We look great right now. The one thing I will say,
Merrill Homer.
Jackson Merrill?
Yes, sir.
Let's go. I feel great about that pick now. I will say, my overreaction.
You just rooted for someone hitting a home run against the Cardinals?
Yeah, that's a little suspect. But my overreaction is actually going to change to be another Cardinals downer pick. I'm going to say Nolan Arenado hits fewer than 20 homers this year. For, I believe it would probably be the first time in his career, unless he had, you know, like a half first season or if he's been injured at all. But I'm going to say Nolan Arenado hits fewer than 20 homers.
His rookie year, I think he hit 18. So you're thinking he's floating around there?
Yeah. He had his first 2 years were 10 and then 18. But he had 26 last year, which was his lowest since that 18 year in 2014. He's been on a steady decline ever since he came to St. Louis. It was 34, 30, 26. So I guess if that continues, then he'll hit, you know, 22. But he's looked pretty lost at the plate this year. Luckily, he's not striking out a ton, which is a good sign, But I do think a lot of the contact that he's making is soft contact. And if you looked at his StatCast data from last year, it was not good. He does not make strong contact with the ball. And I guess the argument would be is that if you look back at his entire career, like his StatCast page has never, like considering how elite of a hitter he was, his StatCast page never really told that story. He's always just been really good at pulling fly balls and really taking advantage of, I don't want to say the little power that he has, but his, you know, middling to above average power. He does a good job of taking advantage of that by pulling all of his fly balls. But I can see, I just see his hitting profile, and it's easy for me to see a very quick decline, and I think that's what we're seeing. And then on the other end of that, I also, another bold prediction is I could say Goldschmidt is going to hit 40 this year again. I have been very, I mean, I was, this is exactly what I was saying before the season, is that I was much more confident in a Paul Goldschmidt bounce back than a Nolan Arenado bounce back. Just because Goldschmidt, I think Goldschmidt is just a generational talent at the plate. And I just trust him to make those adjustments and get better. And his bat speed is already up super fast. He went to driveline over the summer or over the winter. I think he looks great. And I think we could potentially have another MVP caliber season out of Paul Goldschmidt here.
I just want to point out one point of clarification. You said ever since he came to St. Louis, he's been on a decline. He had his career best year in 2022. I'm pretty sure, yeah, he finished third in the MVP. So I
just meant power numbers. I was just talking power numbers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, which is fair. He's playing in cores. I agree. I mean, I don't disagree that he's not going to hit many home runs, but I think even if he hits, I don't see him hitting less than 20, but I don't think he's going to fall off offensively as much as you think his power will. And maybe that's what you were talking
about.
That's
why it's an overreaction.
That is hopefully an overreaction because he's my dynasty third baseman.
Yeah, no. I mean, obviously I'm, you know, overreacting for the segment, but I mean, I do think that his offense is declining, but obviously fewer than 20 home runs this year would be crazy. And yeah, sorry, I didn't clarify that. I guess I just meant his power numbers have been declining.
Yeah, and that is true.
All right, go ahead, Brock. You have any other overreactions from the first weekend of the series?
Not an overreaction, but I want to, since my new intro is Victor Scott, I've got to be even more of a Victor Scott stan. So I want to hear what you guys think if he's going to keep, if he's earned enough, or if he showed enough that he's going to keep playing, or if they're going to start platooning Siani in there. Because I'm pretty sure Siani, and maybe he's not playing center, I can't watch the game, but do you think he's gonna has a shot to stick at center field from what you guys have seen?
I think he's looked great defensively. To be completely honest, though, I think Victor Scott's greatest strength is also going to be his greatest weakness in terms of playing time, because I think having Victor Scott on the bench and somebody that you can sub in and have pinch run whenever you want late in a game in the exact spot that you want him on the base paths is incredibly valuable. So I think that even if he isn't, even if his performance at the plate doesn't necessarily warrant a platoon, the added value that you get from having him on the bench and being able to pinch run at any given time, I think might actually hurt him in terms of plate appearances in the long run.
And that's fair, but that would be a direct comp to one Billy Hamilton, who is an awesome, fun player, but I really, really hope that's not the case.
Yeah.
Vansel, what are you seeing out of Victor Scott?
Man, fun on the base pass. Kind of solidifies some defense for us. As far as this year goes, I don't really see him getting consistent playing time up here once Edman and Nupar are back. So I don't think they're going to keep him up here just as a bench piece when he's so young and needs to develop his hitting more. So I don't really see him getting a ton of at bats and run this year, assuming health in the outfield. Lars Nootbaar is starting his rehab assignment this week. I would assume that Ciani might be the first to go, but not necessarily, because I feel like if they don't have a starting spot for him where he's getting consistent playing time, I don't think they'll keep him up and stunt his development. But
yeah,
long term,
I think
if he can hit, he'll play. If he can get on base, really.
I don't need to sabotage any more time for Victor Scott, but it is interesting because, yeah, on one hand, for me, who wants him to develop as a hitter, I kind of want him to go spend a little bit more time in the minors, not as like a punishment, but just you got a taste. You saw the Dodgers. You did pretty well. Now go try and work on some things in AAA. But the Cardinals could see it from like Nick's perspective. I mean, this guy's super valuable just to have on the bench to pinch run if we need him. And that would stunt his growth. So, yeah, something I'm going to keep an eye on as a Cardinal and Victor Scott fan.
I would imagine if that happened, it would be late in the year if they're needing, like, once the minor league season's done and rosters expand, then that would probably be more the case. But I can't imagine they would just leave him on the bench to run whenever he's so young and still has a, you know, just give up on the hit tool.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Or just try to platoon him here and there because Carlson will be coming off injury and Edmund too. So,
yeah, it is a little bit, I don't know, of a warning sign that we just saw Estuary Ruiz demoted for the Athletics rather, which is kind of crazy. Like, there's no way that guy shouldn't just be in the A's lineup every day. But I don't know. I think teams they struggle, or at least I guess the A's are struggling to see the value in that kind of hitting profile. But I don't know. I like it. I mean, it's always been my favorite players. Like we've said multiple times on this podcast, and you know, my favorite player ever was Billy Hamilton. And I wish that Billy Hamilton would have had, you know, the hit tool. I think that Victor Scott is maybe one of the highest upside hit tool guys that we've really seen like this in the Estuaries, Billy Hamilton category. So I agree. I hope that they don't give up on his hit tool and he doesn't get relegated to the Estuaries or Billy Hamilton role, because I think that would be a disservice to his upside and his potential.
Have you heard the theory of why he got sent down, Ruiz?
I have not, no, but I would love to hear it because it seems crazy.
He was wearing a last dive bar bracelet, which is the like movement for the protesters in Oakland to stay in Oakland. So it was a punishment for supporting the protests against the Athletics.
Really? Because, right, I guess he was supporting like the sell the team crowd.
Pretty much, yeah. And I mean, he was off to a hot start. I mean, I think, you know, just a theory. I don't know if they had like, well, the corresponding move was with that, if they activated somebody off IL or what, but that was some rumors I was seeing about that.
That seems crazy because the person that it would offend would be the owners. And like, I can't imagine even the manager would really be offended by seeing him doing something like that. So it'd have to be the owner, like seeing him wearing this and then, you know, saying something. I don't know. It just, that seems crazy. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's tough.
I mean, nothing for sure, but, you know.
Yeah. Do we want to, we've been talking about a lot of positives. We want to talk about some negatives and look at some injuries here. Let's start with Ben's guy, Justin Steele. You had mentioned him a little bit already, but I mean, he looked good in his start, and I'm excited about Justin Steele in general. I have him in a lot of redraft leagues. He was one of my biggest targets because I think he was kind of the last guy in that tier of, you know, close to like making that next step pitchers. I think he was in the same tier with a lot of pitchers that were being drafted way before him. So I have a lot of shares of Justin Steele. So I'd love to hear some good news from you here. So what do you got? What are you hearing from Cubs Justin Steele camp?
Basically, Craig Counsell said that there's not quite a timetable yet, but that he expects him to miss all of April and then kind of plan it by ear from there. Hamstring strain. I'm expecting him to miss probably 6 weeks. Hopefully it's not eight. But, yeah, I mean, just from seeing the injury, thank God he didn't blow out his knee. That's what I thought at first. So, you know, at least we didn't lose him for the season. But seems like he will be out for a hot second, which also sucks for me because I'm double-dipped in both our leagues with Justin Steele. So, pretty tough. But, you know, at least it's not like anything season-ending or arm-related. So those are all, you know, good.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lack of arm-related injury is always always a good thing with pitchers. Easier to come back from a leg injury, at least you would think, than a shoulder or elbow or something like that.
And I think it was his plant leg, which, like, I think would be the preferable leg to injure as well. So, you know, the small bright side to maybe 2 months out for Justin Steele.
Yeah. And it just, those pitching injuries that don't happen when you're pitching, like when you're going to field, and like the old injury, like when a pitcher was swinging a bat or running the bases or something like that. Luckily, they don't do that anymore. But a pitching injury while they're in the field is a bummer. Yes. But also, like, hypothetically, if you're injuring something when you're running through the field, you're injuring something that you're not doing while you're pitching. And ideally that is something that is less impactful on your actual pitch motion. So that is that's some silver lining there. Vansel or Brock, do either of you know what's going on with Josh Jung? I know this is very, very recent news within the last hour or so, but I believe he got hit by a pitch and was immediately removed from the game. And fractured a wrist. I don't know how long that looks. I can pull up Twitter. Does anybody have any idea what's going on with Eloy either? Brock, you got something on either Josh Jung or Eloy Jimenez?
Yeah, and this is all just Twitter, but and they're saying like source. I forget who their manager is. I just refreshed out of it. But they said that their manager confirmed that he broke his wrist. So it was like a pitch up and in. And he went to, like, swing at it and follow through, and the ball hit. So he's a righty. So it hit his top hand, his right arm, just hit right on the wrist there. So I don't know that which wrist you break really matters, but that's, like, your power hand, your top hand when you swing, whether you're lefty, it's your left, or righty, it's your right. That's where guys, like, generate their power from. So that could potentially be a concern for him. I think he had a somewhat similar injury in the past. I felt like it was something with an arm, but that really hurts for the Rangers and hurts for him because he was batting third against lefties. And the Rangers started hot, but he also looked like he was going to have a really, really good year. So I hope, one, it's not a long-term injury. Like, usually broken hands or wrists heal up fairly quick. So hopefully he heals quick and then can get back to where he started the season.
Yeah, and the Eloy news that I saw, I don't know if anybody has any information on Eloy, but the last that I saw on Eloy is that this is actually going to be an extended absence for Eloy, which is just, I don't know, it's just an absolute bummer. I mean, it looks like, I don't know, I'm just, my research is typing Eloy's name into Twitter and scrolling a little bit, but a strained adductor.
Left abductor. He dealt with the injury last year and went on the IL for it. So,
yeah.
Re-hurting, restraining.
Just such a bummer that Eloy Jimenez just cannot stay healthy. He's just a guy that's got a lot of talent and just can't stay on the field or can't stay on the field, unfortunately. And then there's another guy that also got hurt in the very first game. And Vansel, you sent I mean, I hate saying that it's a funny message in our group chat, but you did send a funny message in our group chat.
Did get like 8 likes.
Yeah, you had ESPN alerts, and the first one was Royce Lewis home run, and the second one was Royce Lewis removed from the game because he was injured.
Yes, the Royce Lewis experience.
Yes.
Sprained quad, they said it was severe. He's getting shut down for at least a month, and then they're reevaluating him from there. So, I mean, at this point, I'm imagining at least out through all of May.
Yeah, and that's just so brutal for him.
And another leg injury too, as that's kind of been the majority of his injuries since he's torn his ACL twice, now severe quad strain. Quad's a big muscle.
So. Yeah, and the good news is that it isn't another ACL or knee thing, but still, it's just so brutal.
Yeah, on his second at bat, running the bases. So, it's definitely not ideal. It's an unfortunate blow. For baseball, really, because whenever he's playing, like his 162 pace is like 44 home runs, like 300 average or something like that. So he's exciting to be when he's on the field. It's unfortunate that he just can't seem to stay healthy. Well, hopefully he can. I mean, that 1 month off hopefully can be enough rehab assignment. He's back, and then he can stay on the field. I know last year, whenever he came back with, I believe it was the hamstring last year, like any ground ball, he was like 30% jogging, even in the playoffs. So maybe it'll just be more of that. But I mean, better to have his bat. And at least, even if he's not running whatsoever. But I mean, truly a shame.
Yeah.
Big talent that just can't stay on the field.
Yeah, definitely a shame. I think we'd kind of be crazy not to talk about the guy that just threw a no-hitter tonight in Ronel Blanco. Looks like he threw 105 pitches. He had 20 swings and misses, which, like, that's not that bad. That's a pretty good number on 105 pitches. He's kind of a career minor league player. It looks like he's 30 years old this year, started in Houston. He's been with Houston his entire career, starting in rookie ball at age 22. So he's had, you know, 7 or 8 years throughout the minors. And they've stuck with him. So I think in terms of like fantasy relevance and baseball relevance, I think it's probably more of a fun story and less of anything relevant fantasy wise. I don't know. Do you guys get any sort of indication that it's anything other than that? It looks like last year he started 7 games through 52 innings. He had 9 Ks per 9, so, you know, a strikeout an inning, but his ERA was 4.5, and his FIP and XFIP were even worse. His FIP was nearly 6, and his XFIP was over 5. So I don't think there's probably not a whole lot there, because it doesn't look like his pitches really changed a whole lot from last year. Like, the spin rates on all of his pitches were all pretty much within normal ranges. None of them varied more than, 70. The spin rate didn't vary more than 70. The pitch velocity, none of it really varied more than a little over a mile per hour. The only one, I mean, his fastball was actually down almost a mile per hour. His slider was down a mile per hour. And the horizontal break, vertical break, like, none of it is really jumping out at me like he's really made any adjustments. I think it's just kind of a fun story and, a lucky day at the ballpark. And I mean, it's awesome to see a guy that's, gone through the minors with one team for 7 or 8 years come up and do this in a spot where they needed it too. Like, they needed a win. They got swept by the Yankees. So it's definitely fun, but I don't think super fantasy relevant. Pencil, you got anything?
Yeah, they were talking on the broadcast about how he added a changeup. I don't know what your data is showing for a changeup on that.
If his changeup is new, he threw his changeup more than he threw any other pitch. It was 34% of the time he's throwing his changeup, and he got 10 whiffs on it. So
yeah,
that's half his whiffs coming on the changeup. So if that's a new pitch, then that's something that could be interesting.
Yeah, they're saying he added a changeup in this year. That he had a kid, so he matured and added another pitch was what they said. So
they did it for the kid. Word it like that.
It was something along those lines, like as a joking matter. But the main thing being,
he got his dad's strength.
He added a change up, and I guess I don't know what his pitch mix is, but I mean, adding a third pitch will help with lefties too. I mean, if it was getting 10 whiffs, he was probably throwing it to some righties since they're a pretty heavy right-handed lineup. So,
I mean, never know. Minor league numbers.
Astros are a good organization, so they can fix some things too. But yeah, no Bo Bichette in the lineup. He's kind of their hit guy. I think he led the American League in back-to-back years in hits now.
That sounds right.
So, I mean, that definitely doesn't help us, guys.
Go ahead, Brock.
Yeah, I didn't know where to jump in there. Just really quick, he was good in the minor, like not great, but he had a 3.6 ERA for the last 2 years and a 3.4 the year before that. I mean, he was no world beater, but seems like just the classic Astros guy that they've had in their minors. Who he's not going to probably be fantasy relevant, but I mean, probably a good back into the rotation type of guy. Cool.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the decrease in like velocity and all that's probably just because he wasn't stretched out. Like they weren't planning to throw him 9 innings. So I'm sure he had a huge drop off at the end of the last few innings there. But he had a new changeup. I don't know if a good swing and miss pitch can be kind of cool to see if they maximize his production late in his career.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder what the splits in terms of velocity look like from, you know, the first 4 or 5 innings to the last 4 or 5 innings. I'm sure that's a good point. I'm sure they didn't plan on throwing him all 9 innings, but when a guy's got a no hitter and he's only ends up at 105 pitches, and that's super efficient. Like throwing a no hitter at only 105 pitches, that's good efficiency. And the max exit velocity they gave up was only 100 miles an hour, which obviously 100 miles an hour is a hard hit ball, but only have like a maximum exit velocity of right at 100. So it's not like even there were any guys that really crushed the ball against him. So I don't know. Maybe it's interesting. Maybe it's something that we can keep our eye on a little bit with his new changeup, because it does look like his changeup was the pitch that he threw the most. And it also, he only had 2 other pitches in that. So if last year he really was just a fastball slider guy and always has been a fastball slider guy, then maybe adding this changeup will be interesting. But I will say that his last 2 years in the minors were very good, yes. But he's, you know, 27, 28, 29 thrown in the minors at that point. And usually I feel like people discredit a lot of, you know, good AAA players that are 28, 29 usually, just because they're, you know, thrown against 22-year-olds oftentimes or 23-year-olds. But yeah, I mean, I think, regardless of whether he's, you know, going to keep it up or be a big factor this year, great for him. I mean, that's awesome. That's really cool. And like I said, it came in a big spot for the Astros after going 0-4. I think they kind of needed that one. That's pretty much all I got. Unless you guys have any other reactions or anything else that you wanted to touch on post, you know, almost a week into baseball here. Exciting stuff. I mean, some of the injuries have been, you know, pretty devastating with like Royce Lewis and Eloy and Justin Steele, obviously. But I think for the most part, it's been a healthy, you know, half week here. So I think that's good. And it's been exciting baseball to watch. Fancy, what do you got?
We didn't do a tee around the league, but the Brewers, Mets, Rhys Hoskins versus Jeff McNeil. It's kind of exciting to watch for opening. And then Genesis Cabrera also pushing whoever that was on the Rays. Couple bench clearing events happening. So kind of like to see some things get heated. It makes for exciting TV.
Yeah, and it is funny, especially with Rhys getting into it with the Mets after he had been in the NL East for so long. Like, you know, he's never liked the Mets. So that was
– they have history already. I guess he had history with them prior to it. So You know, I don't think the Mets really liked Reese going into that game.
Yeah, and then he hits a homer in one of the games, and he slides into Jeff McNeil another one of the games. Like, and then they threw a ball at him, and they ended up getting ejected for it. So, yeah, that was fun stuff. There wasn't anything like that crazy, like with the benches clearing or anything like that. And they didn't even hit Reese Hoskins when they threw at him. That just was a wild pitch that went way behind him. But yeah, no, that's T. That's fun. And I think it's cool to see Reese Hoskins, you know, back in action, and, you know, after missing an entire year, and it looks like he's still, you know, he's been playing well, which is cool.
Yeah, I'm here for the, go ahead. Nope.
Oh, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I hope baseball reverts back to the 80s environment with the stolen base numbers, the bigger bags. You can't block the bag anymore. We didn't see any major call discrepancies, I don't think, for that, or any big like runner interference calls. But I think that the MLB is trying to incentivize stolen bases. So if that's the case, maybe guys just start trying to move guys over and score runs instead of hitting home runs, and we go back to the days of the 80s. And I don't know. I think I'm excited to see how the season runs its course, and if more guys will steal more bags, and as a result there'll be more runs created, then it'll be a more balanced baseball, I think, with power and just getting guys on and moving them over. Fun fact of the day, Vansel.
Side note before that, how crazy would it be if they had the juice balls and all these stolen bases rules? Like Acuña.
Baseball would be back. And you could watch the games for free. We solved the problem.
Acuña just going like 60, 70. That'd be wild. But yes, fun fact. So with teams getting swept to start the year, I decided to look into longest winning streaks to start the season. Then I remember that the Rays tied that record at 13 last year. The Milwaukee Brewers from 1987 and Atlanta Braves from 1982 also are at 13. But then with teams getting swept, I decided to look into longest losing streaks to start a season. And the 1988 Orioles started a season 0-21.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, 3 weeks worth of games of losing. The next closest is the Chicago Cubs at 14 in 1997. Wish I could have been born 1 year earlier to be a part of that. Those are the fun little facts of the day.
We also should maybe mention the Oakland Athletics had 5 errors by the third inning today. That is absolutely brutal for Oakland Athletics fans.
They're pulling the Rams, just tanking their team, and making the excuse that they're not making money because they can't fill the stadium, and then they're going to go to the Vegas and probably spend a bunch of money and be fun.
It's yeah. Be. I mean, if they –
Mark Kotze or Oakland. Jeff Fisher of baseball.
Seems like it.
I mean, if that's the case and they are actually on the Rams trajectory, then Las Vegas Athletics World Series champs in 2026 or 2027 or whatever. I can't remember how long the Rams had been in LA before they won, but I think it was only a couple of years. I think it was
a year, two or three years.
Yeah. So boom, there's Brock's bold prediction.
However, I will say I would be excited if they went to Vegas because my future father-in-law, he loves Vegas, and they go out there with their friends, or they go out there 2 or 3 times a year just for like a weekend. And if they had baseball there, it would give me something to do because I don't like just gambling all day. So that would be sweet.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that's the business model for a lot of these teams, for, you know, the Raiders, the Golden Knights, and now the Oakland Athletics. I think it sucks as like a fan base, because like you're going to make a ton of money being in Vegas just because there's so many people that just want to go to Vegas. And then if there's a game, they'll go to the game too. But like, in order to like to have like a consistent fan base, I think the Golden Knights maybe have the biggest, what you would consider consistent fan base. Like, I don't think the Raiders have really established themselves, but I think the Golden Knights, I mean, I don't know a ton about hockey, but I'm pretty sure they've been, ever since they joined the league, pretty consistently good. So I'm sure they have a pretty good fan base.
I think that's right. And like, yeah, Raiders against Chiefs games, there's tons of Chiefs fans. Sorry, Jake Cronenworth just trucked Jordan Walker for some reason. But yeah, half the stadium's red. And it, I don't know, you kind of lose the home field advantage. But in baseball, I don't know. Vegas, I think Vegas would support the A's, but you do bring up a good point. They're just kind of, then we don't care about the fan base. We want money. And that's right. Why Esteban Ruiz is now in minor leagues, I think, is the point I was making there.
Yeah, and I think that, like, from that perspective, like, for the Raiders, from the Raiders team perspective, like, I think a lot more Chiefs fans are going to travel to Las Vegas to watch a Raiders-Chiefs game than would travel to Oakland for a Raiders-Chiefs game. So, obviously, they're going to sell more tickets. They're going to have more revenue. All that, you know, they're going to, you know, sell out a lot of games, and they have a lot of other things to do in the city around them. But in terms of, like, the team and the players, like, as a player, all your games are going to basically be away games, it's going to feel like. So I don't know. I don't really like, I understand the business model behind it, but I don't really like it.
I agree. Andy,
all right.
You have that previous trauma. I guess you were a Cowboys fan, but
yeah,
you had the previous shared trauma of losing the Rams.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's the same thing in LA. Like, the Rams are the, you know, one of the least exciting things that are going on in any given weekend in LA. So I've been trying to tell my friends, like, when I'm in Kansas City and I, you know, I'm driving around on a Sunday, like, the amount of Chiefs flags and people wearing red, and like, you can't go to a restaurant without, I remember there was a football Sunday where I went and the Chiefs were playing that first round of games. So they're playing as well as like seven other games are going on. And I went to a sports bar in Kansas City that had, it had to have had 30 TVs. Every single one of them had the Chiefs on it. I'm like, there's like six other games going on right now. Do we need to be watching the Chiefs on all 30 TVs right now? But it is, it's just such a different, I don't know, it's just so different. Like, LA, not that people don't care about the Rams, and maybe it's just, you know, relativity because there's so many more people here. And I'm sure there is a group of, you know, diehard Rams fans, but you just don't run into that kind of stuff down here. And obviously, I think Las Vegas is the same idea. But you're going to get enough people live around here that will fill up the stadium and will, you know, buy tickets and stuff. So that's all I got. You guys have anything before we send off episode one of season two?
I don't think
Paul.
So.
Hello, Paul. Thank you for watching, brother. People.
Yeah, it's I'm excited for season two of Chin Music. We will be taking a week off next week. It is the solar eclipse, so that's exciting. All of you St. Louis listeners, on next Monday, so April 8th, make sure to travel a little bit south and watch the solar eclipse. I'm flying home to see it, so that is exciting. But then we will pick things up the next Monday afterwards. Lots of baseball between now and our next episode, and hopefully lots of good things to talk about. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.